Yeah, thanks a lot, Brian, and thanks a lot, everybody else, for coming today to talk about this really important issue. I just want to make a couple of comments. There'll be a lot of talk, I'm sure, today about a particular pain and specific, you know, lack of bills being paid and people having specific individual hurt. And that's certainly, you know, vitally important to the state. But there's more afoot here than just the individual impacts. And so what I want to do is think a little bit more broadly and talk about the three C's here that are being damaged and are being hurt by all this craziness. First one is credit. Okay, the state and local governments always need to borrow money for various capital improvements. That's just like you borrow money to pay for a house and then pay it off as you use it. We do the same thing with roads and bridges and public buildings. Right now, our credit rating is just a couple of notches above junk status for the state, and many of the universities are, I think, what, five are in junk status right now, the universities individually, but the state itself. And there are signals that this could go lower if they don't come up with a budget in the near future, certainly by the beginning of the fiscal year. And if that happens, when we move down to junk status, all of a sudden many institutional investors can no longer invest in our bonds. That shrinks the buying pool, that raises the price, and so it's a long-term amount of money. We already have the lowest credit rating of any state in the country by several notches, and that means our borrowing costs are higher. Plus, research by Marty Luby at the Institute of Government Public Affairs recently demonstrated that not only do we pay the extra price in interest that lower rates or lower ratings cost, we actually pay more than some other, you know, generic state would be with the same rating. He calls it the Illinois penalty. And this is, you know, like human being, you know, just like people, right? When you get more debt, you get a double whammy. You got to pay that big debt off, plus you got to pay more to do so. And this is an impact that's going to last for years. The second C that we're having a problem with is confidence. It is less concrete than the credit problem, but you know, the state is facing a crisis of confidence from a variety of people that are involved in and around the state. Now, the credit problem actually is. It is based on confidence. Wall Street's confidence. They don't think we can pay the money back, so they're going to charge us more for the privilege of borrowing it. But people in the state and out of the state are losing confidence in our leaders' abilities to solve the problems that we're faced with right now. So, you know, voters are becoming disenchanted, if polling is any indication. They dislike everybody equally. Business leaders are worrying about the future. They're thinking about investments, whether it be expansions or moving in or out of the state. College students are leaving the state. Instead of going to Eastern, they're going to Indiana State. Instead of going to Southern, they're going to Murray State. And we're seeing more and more evidence of that. People are moving away from the state in higher numbers than our neighbors. And public officials are leaving office because of this disenchantment. So, you know, can our leaders fix this mess? I think that's an open question. I will say that they will fix this mess, and they can fix this mess. It's just a question of how long it's going to take them to do it, because it's what we're seeing now can't go on forever. don't ask me when. Could be tomorrow, could be 2 years from now, I don't know, but it's going to happen. But the question is it soon enough that will not damage the confidence that people have and that we need in the state in order to progress? And the third C in my list is comedy, the lack of comedy, and that's with a T, not a D. But I think both are in short supply these days. The political system and the policymaking process in Illinois is as rancorous as I've ever seen it before. And, you know, Governor Eggers has been around a lot longer than I have, so he may find it happening. There may be a similar period that I don't know what it is. And, you know, it starts with frustration and I'm talking about among the policymakers right now, not among necessarily among the citizens. People have to solve these problems. They have to get together under the dome and work these things out. It starts with a frustration by the policymakers that they can't get something done, and it's fueled by unprecedented and vast amounts of campaign money. You know, we bemoan this about D.C. all the time, but it's very much reflecting and increasing in Springfield. You know, you cross the line, you cross the party line, and it's an offense punishable by death, or at least $1 million funded primary opponent. And, you know, so you've got lack of trust among the governor and the legislative leaders, that's evident. And as the problems grow in length and in size, tempers flare, frustration and distrust grows, pressure builds. It is a miserable place in the state capital these days. And no one under the dome is happy, especially the leadership. Even the affable John Cullerton is rarely cracking a joke these days, or at least not that I've seen. So that's my 2 cents worth.
All right. Thank you very much, Chris. Our next panelist, the 38th governor of the state of Illinois, first elected in 1990, reelected in 1994, Jim Edgar. Governor, if you could just briefly give us your thoughts on the state of things right now in Illinois.
Well, to me, the most important issue every year in state government is the budget. As the governor for the 8 years, that was my number one priority. Now, there's other things I wanted, but nothing was as important as getting a good budget. And that's what I think we need to dwell on here in Illinois. We need to get a good budget. There's a lot of other issues. Some of them are good issues. Some of them, I think, are a little phony. But none of them compare to having a good budget. And we haven't had one now for 2 years. And I've been around Springfield for 50 years. The state is in the worst mess it's ever been in. Even during the Begorovich years, it wasn't as bad as it is now. Part of it is what Chris has mentioned, the rancor, the non-civility that exists today. That's true of all of politics, unfortunately, but it's come big time in Springfield. Now, when I was governor, Speaker Madigan's been speaker forever. I think he went back to Lincoln's time. But we used to fight, but it never was personal. I mean, I used to have him down for lunch every day when we were in an impasse, trying to figure out how do we get each other off the limb. But unfortunately, that's not true today. It's become much more personal. Again, Chris mentioned the amount of money being spent, attacking people on their personal character. It's really hard to call someone a crook and then expect them the next day to sit down and compromise with you. That's just, I don't think, a good strategy. So unfortunately, as Chris has mentioned, the atmosphere today is much different than what I went through 25 years ago when we had a budget crisis. I mean, we thought it was the biggest budget crisis the state ever faced in 1991. It looks like child play compared to what they're facing today. So we need to focus on the budget. The budget is the most important issue. People talk about the economics. Again, the budget is crucial to the economics of this state. We have seen damage done in the last 2 years that has cost jobs and I think has cost much of our economic future. Those thousands of young people who are leaving Illinois to go to higher education in another state probably aren't coming back. And to me, that's the number one economic criteria to a strong future, is the workforce, and particularly our young people. So that damage alone, to me, from an economic point of view, is a reason why we need to stop all this fighting and rhetoric and let's deal with the budget. It's not going to be easy. You know, we're still arguing over whether we're going to talk about a budget. Once we get there, that'll be tough negotiations too. Just if the governor and the leaders agree to really sit down and talk about a budget, I don't think it's going to be that easy to resolve if we ever get there. We're going to have to raise taxes, which is very unpopular. We're going to have to cut spending, which is very unpopular. I had to do both, and I know how people don't like that. And third, and this is maybe going to be the toughest thing to solve this, it's not going to be done overnight. It's not going to be done in one fiscal year. We're going to have to stay on a fiscal diet in Illinois for several years to undo the damage. Some of this damage done before 2 years ago, but particularly the extraordinary amount of damage that's been done the last 2 years. Won't be easy. But everybody, I think, needs to understand that we need to get on this. Every day that we wait, this problem grows, multiplies huge amounts. So if we solve this tomorrow, don't expect in a week everything's going to be back to normal in Illinois. It's going to take a long time. And I think everyone here who said maybe you're not affected, yes, you are affected. You just may not know it. But everyone in this state has been affected, and not in a positive way. So I just hope that sanity can return to Springfield. You don't have to like each other. I'm not sure Speaker Madigan liked me. I'm not sure I liked him. But you know, at the end of the day, we could sit down and work something out. And we need to get back to those times where you remember you're there to solve problems. You're not there just to get reelected. Now, I have to tell you, as a former politician, we all want to get reelected. But the purpose of getting elected is not just to run for reelection. It's to do something. And the time is to do something in Springfield.
Thank you, Governor. Our third panelist tonight is the president of the University of Illinois, Timothy Colleen. President Colleen, just your thoughts on where we are right now.
Good evening, everybody, and thanks to you and to WILL for hosting this forum. It's a really important time for the state, and the budget impasse is taking a major toll on public higher education that we all need to be concerned about. I've been in the state for 2 years, and I think I must have done something wrong when I showed up but it is unconscionable that it's continuing to go on because real damage is being done. The historical roots of this situation in Illinois are deep, though. It's not just like problems have emerged in the last couple of years with the most recent gubernatorial election. There are deep problems to resolve in terms of unfunded pensions, et cetera, and we have to take advantage of our assets in this state in very important ways to work our way out of the hole in which the state finds itself. The role of institutions like ours has never been more important. We have to exercise honor, integrity, and thought to be able to move forward. And that means institutions like University of Illinois have to be leaner, more efficient. They have to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. We have to thread the needle in terms of the bipartisan relationships. It's very important to recognize that there is good faith, despite the lack of comedy. All individuals want good things to happen for the state, and they may be working in different parts of a spectrum, and we need to mine the individual components. And we want to try to do that at U of I, but we are certainly in a slow erosion of quality and excellence that's not worthy of this state, not worthy of the families, not worthy of the 81,000 students that we have under our wings and the 20,000 graduates that come forward and their job prospects, et cetera. So we have to do something about this. Like our peers, we've been very strategic and thoughtful in trimming where we can. We've got our own bill, our own budget that we've written in a bipartisan way over the last year that we think is a very thoughtful, strategic, forward-leaning option to look at public higher education in its fullness in terms of performance and accountability as well as outcomes. So we need to do that, but there's no getting away for the damage. We're $650 million out from where we would normally be. The state is losing on a net basis 16,000 high schoolers every year. We only retain one in three applicants to the University of Illinois. And when we ask them why they're not coming, this is a big issue, the confidence issue that was raised there. Also the financial issue. There are great concerns about pension deficits and about the cost of public higher education. So there's a lot to do, but I'm an inherent optimist, and I think the assets of this state are truly extraordinary. We have wonderful institutions, we have smart people, we've got a willingness to work hard, the Midwest work ethic is still there. It's important that we recognize that we are in a hole. The first law of holes is to stop digging when you're in a hole. We need to do that now. The second law of holes is to climb out. It's going to take years to climb out, as has been noted already. It's going to take a determined, long-term, visionary strategy of how to build public equity, social equity, human capital in this state, and it's going to need all of the aspects of public-private partnering, innovation agendas, as well as retention of talent in this state to do that. I believe, and I'm incredibly proud of what the U of I has been able to do. We have weathered the worst of the crisis. You've not seen massive layoffs, you've not seen furloughs, you've not seen us crying wolves at the door, although I joke sometimes the wolf is just over that privet hedge, and now the fangs are showing as well. So we can't have another year of this. It is unconscionable, as I pointed out. When I was in Springfield the last couple of days, I know people are frustrated. They're working hard, long hours towards a resolution. We do need that degree of aspirational thinking and integrity that will allow us to get to a place where compromises can be sought and made. But in the meantime, I can assure you that the U of I, celebrating its 150th anniversary this year, is going to be here for another 150 years. We are going to do everything we can to preserve our core mission, which is the world-class experience of our students. That's what we care most about. We are down 400 FTEs that are jobs missing from over the last year or so, but they're administrative jobs. They're not jobs that directly interface with our students. And we've got our plans to make further investments in the kinds of facilities and faculty that will really build the human capital that the state is going to need present in this state, working in this state, paying taxes in this state, with a funding pathway that allows us to get out of these long-term problems. I think the leadership is there. I think we need a little bit of magic pixie dust, perhaps, but the role of the U of I, I think, is incredibly important as an institution that is part of the solution and not part of the problem. I have to say that some of our other public institutions in the state are really suffering, very close to catastrophic decisions. And that's not worthy for their students and their families too. And once you're on these slippery slopes, it's hard to turn around and stop and return to where we are. So we're going to do everything we can to advocate. We're going from urging to demanding. I hope maybe that's the theme for this evening. It's time to demand rather than just simply urge. And any time a politician tells me, well, I think it's so difficult there may not be a budget, my response is, that is not for you to say. We need a budget, it's your job, your role, and let's work together. Let's find the path, let's create the ideation, let's create the templates to move forward. And I think with the good faith that is there, it really is there, I'm optimistic that maybe we'll see a breakthrough pretty soon. So thanks for your time and for inviting me to this.
Thank you, President Killeen. Our fourth panelist tonight is from the sponsor of tonight's event, AARP. Thank you very much for sponsoring tonight's discussion. The president of Illinois AARP, Rosanna Marquez. Ms. Marquez, your thoughts on
yes.
our current situation.
Yes, thank you. Good evening, everyone. My thanks to NPR Illinois for giving us the opportunity to, through this past due forum, to share our concerns and, more importantly, give a forum to hear all of your concerns. We're all trying to keep our remarks fairly brief because we're all really looking forward to hearing what you have to say. AARP has 1.7 million members in Illinois who are very deeply concerned, very frustrated, and yes, even quite angry about the failure of our elected officials to do their very basic job for which they were elected, which is to pass a budget. And so AARP, for its part, has launched our Enough is Enough campaign to give voice to those concerns and to your voices and to help lead the state back into long-term fiscal health, but starting first and foremost by getting a sound budget passed in this state. I am eager to hear directly from all of you, but want to lay out a little bit of groundwork by setting aside what I think are a couple of misconceptions about the crisis we find ourselves in. First is the idea that this two-year budget stalemate is some abstract political Springfield problem with no lasting impact or harm being visited on all of this. This is not the case. You've heard allusion to some big numbers. I'm going to throw a few big numbers at you. Illinois is over $14 billion in the hole in unpaid bills, a number that is growing by a full half billion dollars $1 billion each and every month that we don't have a budget. Over $32 billion is owed to the state's bondholders. And there's an unfunded pension liability in this state of over $130 billion. These are all big, real numbers that we should all be concerned about. Without a balanced budget and a plan for addressing these long fermenting problems, this state will be forced to raise each and every one of our taxes throughout the state to cover all of that debt. And it's not just taxes at the state level, but it will be taxes at the local level as more and more obligations are pushed down to our municipalities. You know, already Illinois has now the single highest property taxes in the country. The budget issue has led to dramatic and real economic consequences as thousands of Illinoisans have lost jobs. We've lost over 10,000 manufacturing jobs in Illinois just in the past year. And we've lost 50 major businesses to Indiana and 65 to Wisconsin recently, both all trends that will continue if we don't fix, for starters, are the lack of a coherent budget. Seniors and their families are already facing severe consequences as funding for the kinds of programs that allow seniors to get home-based care erodes. And so we're beginning to see, you know, parents and grandparents who are forced prematurely into nursing homes robbed of their ability to stay and grow older in their communities. I am glad to be back here at my alma mater. This is my undergraduate alma mater. I have had the chance to walk around here these last couple days that I've been here, and it is in pretty good shape, but the state of public education in the state is quite dire, and I will only add to the comments that you've already heard that Illinois is only second now to New Jersey in the country in terms of exporting students, as students and their parents look for more stable quality education prospects elsewhere. I could go on, but I hope you get the picture generally of how this affects all of us. The second misconception that I want to attack here this evening is that politicians don't care about our concern and that there is nothing that we can do about it. This is wrong on both counts. Elected officials do care, even if it is only about getting reelected or gaining some sort of political advantage. Our challenge is to make them care about the issues that we as their constituents care about and to understand that it is to their greatest political advantage or disadvantage to pass a budget or not. Which gets me to the second part of this misconception, that there is nothing that we can do about this while this all plays out in Springfield. There is something that we can do. They do listen. We just have to act. At the NPR Past Due Forum a couple of weeks ago in Springfield, we heard from my fellow AARP Executive Council member, Howard Peters, who's had a long, distinguished career in state government, including as a deputy chief of staff in the governor's office. He said there, and I can confirm as someone who worked for a number of years in senior positions in the mayor's office in Chicago, that every letter gets read. Indeed, every letter is assigned to someone who has to read and respond directly to that letter. We also have another executive council member at AARP, Beth Colson, who's a former state legislator, who's told us that she's checked with her former colleagues, and they tell her that for whatever they're reading in the papers, they're still not hearing so much from their constituents about their concerns and frustration over the lack of a budget, and therefore that they don't feel as much of an urgency to act. We're working to change that through our Enough is Enough campaign and forums like this. If they don't hear from us, we are giving them permission to continue to do nothing, in which case we get the government that we deserve, and we deserve better than that. So I look forward to hearing from all of you this evening.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Marquez. Thank you to all four of our panelists. You see the two microphones in our aisles here. If anyone has any questions for the panel, any comments they'd like to share, if you just feel free to line up beside the microphones, and we will call on you to ask your questions, make your comments here tonight. The one thing I would say, obviously this, as our panelists mentioned, this is an issue that does affect everybody often in very dramatic ways. One of the things that NPR prides itself in is a respectful discussion of even the most controversial topics. So there will be strong emotions tonight, I have no doubt about that, but we ask that we keep the conversation as respectful and civil as possible here this evening. All right? With that, go ahead with your question or comment.
Hello, my name is Dina Lawrence, and I work at the university. I'm also an alumni of the university and a lifelong citizen of Illinois. And I feel like Illinois is my home, and my house is on fire. And the firemen are standing in the street arguing over which hoses will best put out the fire. At this point, it's so far gone, we need to throw everything we've got at this problem. And I respectfully have to disagree with you, Ms. Marquez, because I personally have participated in every outreach to our legislators. I just last week took a vacation day and went over to the alumni day at the Capitol. Our legislators ducked these scheduled meetings. One of them went home for the day an hour before their meeting. The one we did get to talk to said, oh, you know, you just don't understand. It's difficult. Everybody wants our money, and everybody, you know, we can't please everybody. And I would just love to have written a letter with my Illinois taxes that said, well, you just don't understand. Everybody wants part of my paycheck. I gotta pay the mortgage. I gotta pay the utilities. I'll let you know when I have a budget. I'll send you what I owe you. Because that's what they're doing to us. The money is being collected, and they're not dispersing it. And to me, and I'm not a lawyer, I wish I were right now, I don't understand how this is not, in some form or fashion, illegal. Where is our money? You know, we have to pay out for our benefits, and we have to wait. Delta Dental is behind, like, they're processing from 2015. You know, it's crazy. I mean, and all the disadvantages that you all wisely pointed out, it also feels to me like it has become so rancorous. Good people don't want to go into politics anymore. And I had the pleasure a year ago of hearing Governor Edgar speak, and I was the first person to ask a question that day, too, and I asked you, what would it take for you to run again? And he said his wife wouldn't let him. But
yeah, I always blame her. The dental thing, I had the same experience. I have a dental bill from 2015. I got it paid about 2 weeks ago,
oh, wow.
Which I always tell people that. I always hear people complain about public employees and especially the pension. I said, hey, they paid their part.
Yep.
They did their part, you know, get off their backs. Yep. They, you know, the other thing, one of the procedural problems here, there is money in the treasury, but there's no appropriation bill passed
right.
to dispense it because they don't have a budget. I mean, this is ludicrous to me because you do have billions sitting over there. Now, they don't have enough to pay all their bills because they're spending more than they're taking in, particularly when they let the income tax increase expire, but the spending stayed at that level. Today, people say, well, I've had people tell me, well, it's great, we don't have a budget. I said, we're spending more money than we're taking in now because we don't have a budget.
That's
so,
a
I mean,
thing
as,
to say.
As the president says, we haven't stopped digging the hole. And but again, I do think, I do get tired of hearing people rank against the public employees because they have done their share.
Isn't there some way that the citizens of the state would have some legal recourse beyond our vote? Because frankly, by the time the gubernatorial, you know, and Madigan's up for election again, I mean, first of all, there's no guarantee we wouldn't end up with the same mix of people. Mm-hmm. But second of all, that's a really long time to wait for no budget. Another year is just not doable. And I can't help but feel there must be some other recourse. I remember when President Reagan forced the air traffic controllers and the union into binding arbitration because the impact was so severe to the nation of that strike. Why can't we do something like that? Why can't they be required to sit down and do it?
Probably you don't have the law. I mean, fortunately, Reagan had the law. He could do that and do it. But. I'll get out of this, but people, elected officials do respond to their constituents. Now, they might try to dodge them, and I understand that. But at the end of the day, they know, you know, they're going to have the last say. And I think it is extremely important that people speak up, and some of you have done that, but the vast majority have not. And as far as what will trigger this, there's two things that I never thought would happen. I mean, one thing in particular that I thought we'd never get to this point, I never believed you could pay state workers without a budget. And the court, that judge down in St. Clair County, that was screwed that up. That'd be true. I mean, because when I was governor, we always said, I can't go without, you know, we can't pay people if we don't have a bill. If we don't have people working, then things can. The other is when the school aid formula bill was signed in, because that paid to schools, the elementary, secondary. And so schools opened. And that took the pressure off that I guess we never thought would happen without a budget. And now the courts still, Supreme Court has not, for some reason, really dealt with this paying employees without a budget. And I don't know if they ever will take that up, but those are a couple of points that at least some in Springfield thought if that ever happened, that might force this thing. But so far, I never dreamed we'd go two and a half years on a budget. I mean, just I still can't believe it.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming to the alumni. Keep coming. It makes a difference. Keep going. And let's also avoid this blame the victim syndrome, which is also present in the media.
Let me just point out that you raise a really good point about why, you know, where's all this money going? We're giving them their taxes, and it's important to know that, you know, even though we don't have a budget, because of the K-12 portion being signed, because of various court orders like the ability to pay state employees without an appropriation, which, you know, since 1215 on the fields of Runnymede, when the barons of England grabbed King John by the scruff of the neck and forced him to sign the Magna Carta, that is, it's through the legislative process that money gets authorized to be spent. And now it's changed dramatically. But this, so there's all this money that's being spent on autopilot, and it's based on FY 2015 spending levels. And the FY15 is in the middle of that fiscal year. The tax went down. The income tax, the temporary tax increase went down, and so we have autopilot for high levels of spending for about 90% of what government does, and but we have revenue for something like $5 billion or $9 billion a year less than that. And so the things that are outside of those court orders and consent decrees and continuing appropriations, including primarily it's universities and certain human services, they're the ones that are getting the shaft right now. So the University of Illinois and the other universities are disproportionately bearing the brunt of this. But it's harder to worry about them than it is to worry about battered women's shelters that are closing down, or daycare centers. People can't get to work because their subsidized daycare is taken away, or they can't get drug treatment and that sort of thing. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much for your question. Next, go ahead, sir.
My name is Mike Melvin, and I'm a retired electrician from the U of I here, and I'm very concerned about the budget. And I've spoke to both my state representative and state senator for about the last 2 years, at least a monthly basis. And it just aggravates me to talk to them because they don't seem like they care at all. And they kind of don't answer the questions that I ask them. In 1996, the pension liability was about $20 billion. And 17 years later, in 2013, it was about $111 billion. And during that same time period, the first pension reform was given a 50-year period. I don't know why they chose 50 years to have a funded pension liability. And then I figured it out, had it grown the same rate for the next 33 years, it would have been $2.5 trillion, which is quite a bit of money. And it seems like we have a huge exodus of people in Illinois now, and there's 102 counties. Of those, 89 lost population last year. Cook County lost 22,000 people. And I just can't see things getting better until we get a budget. And I think the pension, I can't understand why it wouldn't go to a defined contribution as opposed to a defined benefit, because I think it's too hard to manage that.
All right. Governor Edgar, maybe you can speak to pension reform during your time in office. I know that was a difficult issue that you tried to address while you were in office, and where things went from there.
Two things on that. First of all, the legislature a few years ago did, for all new employees, you basically go that route. I mean, they have the Constitution, contrary, and this was the mistake, about 3 or 4 years ago when they passed the so-called pension fix. It was clearly unconstitutional. I mean, why they wasted their time? And it was bipartisan. I mean, it was the Republicans and the Democrats, the Chicago Tribune, everybody was in on it. And it was clearly unconstitutional. So we delayed for 4 years really dealing with it. Now we have the budget impasse and nothing's happening on it either. Let me go back. When I was governor, when we were finally beginning to come out of the recession in 94, we looked at trying to, for the first time, address the pension thing. Because the pension underfunding had been historical for 40, 50 years. And we did put into play a plan. It did take many years, but it was the first time the state had made a commitment to pay X number of dollars into the pension plan. And the law was you paid it first. The legislature couldn't, to pay what's left over, what they used to do, which never was anything left over. And by the end of my term in 99, the pension fund had gone up. It was the highest fund that it had ever been. Unfortunately, a few years later, they did an early retirement, which gave people 10 years early start on retirement. That may have had an impact. Then there was a ramp on the payment, because the theory was, we're just coming out of recession, we can't pay as much. 10 years from now with inflation, you can pay more. And they all knew it. And we had a tobacco bailout and a lot of things. They didn't put any of that aside. People ask me, as governor, what do you regret the most? And for the most part, I don't regret much. I think things worked pretty well at the end. Things were going, but I left $1.5 billion surplus. I regret that. I should have put that into the pension fund. I should have put that in Al Gore's lockbox or something. Because within 6 months after I left, they'd spent it. And I don't know where it went. And unfortunately, we didn't have the discipline to stick with that payment plan. And then they stopped making that payment. They took out the provision you had to pay it. And the problem has just got worse. So again, I go back to something I said. It's not going to happen overnight. And I don't think we need 100% funded pensions, actuaries and I will argue. But if you notice, most states the Springfield paper had a survey today, and I think most states are funded around 65 to 70, 80% of their pension funds. There's one that was 90, I think Wisconsin was 92, but the rest of them, and we would have been on that path, and I think we'd have been there quicker than 50 years, but unfortunately we got away from that. But again, everybody's got to understand, whatever the solution to paying off our $14 billion debt that's growing every day, or to deal with the pension plan, it's going to take a long-term solution, and we're going to have to stay on it. And as I've always said, the hardest thing to get politicians to do is not to raise taxes or cut spending. That's really hard. It's to stay on a fiscal diet for several years. But everybody in the state's got to understand that too. So you can't go and ask for a lot, because we're not going to have a lot. Just hope we can pay for what we already have. And that's going to take time.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike, for your question. Yes, go ahead, sir.
Hi, my name is Doug Levy. I'm a 2014 graduate of the University of Illinois. My family lives in Champaign. I'm currently a dual degree student. I just finished my first year at Harvard, getting my master's in public policy and also going to law school. So when all four of you spoke to the need for confidence, to use your phrase, and getting young people to come back and work here, continuing the long-term nature of this problem, Governor, as you spoke to. Nobody at my school from Illinois really is encouraged or interested in coming back given the current issues. So I was hoping that you could dive into that topic a little bit more. Why should I, as somebody who hopefully is going to have options as to where I end up after school, why should I come back to the state and start paying all these taxes when there might be a better offer somewhere else?
Illinois is one of the greatest states in the union. We have more resources. We have more things going for us. We just have a breakdown in Springfield right now, and that's caused a mess. But this is a great state, and we need you folks back to make sure it realizes its potential. Chris is, he's a little more optimistic than I am. He thinks this is going to be resolved sometime. I get more and more pessimistic. I never dreamed we'd be in this mess. But this is a great state. This is not Puerto Rico, and this is not Michigan. We're not Detroit. Chicago's not Detroit, and Illinois is not Puerto Rico. Sometimes you wouldn't know that reading the papers, but we have a lot of things going for us, and we need to get back on track, and we need you folks to do that. And again, taxes, talk about taxes, we do have a high property tax. We have one of the lowest income tax in the nation. So it's because we're too high taxes our problem. It's because we haven't met our fiscal needs and been able to do what we need to do. But again, I would say there's not a, you know, I've been around this country a lot, and Illinois has a lot going for it. And one of the things we always had going for it are our universities. In fact, when I was governor, I'd have business leaders say, we don't like your workers' comp, we don't like this and that, but we like stability, and you have stability. We had stability in the 90s. But they said, you also have some of the greatest universities in the world, and that's extremely important to us. And that's what I'm afraid we're going to lose here. We've already put it at a great risk, but again, I would just say to young people, this state still has a great future, and you need to be part of it.
Let me pile on in 30 seconds, if I may, because he's absolutely right. This state has more amenities, opportunities, fresh water, diversified economies, incredible institutions, and it's affordable. You don't have to pay $40,000 a year to park your car like you do in Silicon Valley today. This is a place you can raise your family, and you've got access. This is an amazing state. If it just uses its assets effectively, it will be the mecca. And we're also, incidentally, the capital of the Midwest, which is a third of the GDP of the United States. Just think about that for a minute. We can lead.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Rochelle Harden. I work at Parkland College, the local community college here. I actually ran and won the election as a Parkland trustee. So you'll have to forgive me if I run out of here really quickly, because I have a board of trustees meeting I have to be at 12 minutes. Yikes. But here's my question. To sort of piggyback off of the last question and to talk a little bit about the advantages in the state, I want to sort of address this to President Keeling. I know as a faculty member at Parkland that the faculty are ready, the students are ready. They just need the go-ahead. Have you ever thought about gathering together all of the major universities, all of the community colleges in the state, all of the people who care about higher education and the social services that are not being hurt, gathering them together, all together, and putting the pressure on the legislators to get us a budget?
Yes, we have weekly calls of all the university presidents for the public universities. We've signed letters together. We've shown up in we've waited in line and for legislators who weren't available, just like everybody else. We haven't done it fully with the community college community. They're slightly separate communities, but you're exactly on the right wavelength. We need to do more. And I would say that 2 years ago when this started, we had very little presence in Springfield. We have presence now, and we're being heard.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Yes, Isak Griffiths.
Hi, that's frightening. Hi, my name is Isak Griffiths, and I'm here in Urbana-Champaign. I'm a double Illini, so I bleed orange and blue. I was born in Chicago. I love the state. And for the first time in my life last week, I was actually embarrassed to be from Illinois. And I'll get to that in a second. I actually received a call from AARP asking me to come and tell our story, because it's an opportunity to help people who are listening, who are watching, understand that this isn't just a conversation about pointing fingers. It really is a conversation about impacting the lives of the people of the state of Illinois. I'm the executive director of Courage Connection. It is arguably the oldest battered women's shelter in the nation. It was the first hotline Last year, we helped over 1,400 people. We helped over 800 people in crisis. More than 300 people get orders of protection, and we provided more than 24,000 nights of shelter in our community. It's a huge impact. But because of the state budget crisis, in April, 2 days before payroll, I had $300 in the bank, specifically because I wasn't getting money from the state of Illinois. And I actually agree with you about the budget. One of the challenges is we have a contract that specifies appropriations in our contract from the state of Illinois for $311,000. But because there's not been a bill to approve those appropriations, we're not getting funded. But we weren't told that we weren't getting funded until December of last year. So 6 months into the fiscal year, when more than half of that money was spent, was the first time we found out we were not receiving any of those funds. It would have been a whole lot easier July 1st for them to say, you're simply not getting funding, and handle it, which means probably losing an incredible legacy, not just in our community, but in our nation. But to spend money and then not get it refunded. So over the course of the year, we have been leveraging our other grants and other funding. So for example, most of our local funding sources paid us in advance so we could still provide those services. But now that we're in the last 2 months of the fiscal year, all of those local funding sources have paid us already, and we're still not getting money from the state of Illinois. So imagine going into 2 months with 40 staff members providing shelter for 60 women and children at any given point in time, and not knowing where the next dollar is coming from. When my staff looked me in the eye and said, are we going to be here? It's one thing to say, I don't know. But when someone in our shelter who has come to us because she's been strangled by her partner in front of her children, she came to us because this is the value of shelter. 3 out of 4 women who are killed in domestic violence are killed after they make the decision to leave. 3 out of 4 women are killed after they make the decision to leave. And if you've been strangled, you are 700 times more likely to be killed by your partner. So she came to us, and when she looks me in the eye and says, well, I have a place to stay tomorrow, and I have to say, I don't know. Right, I told this story in Springfield last week at the Appropriations Committee. We have 2 bills to release our funding in Springfield. They both have supermajorities. They both have supermajorities on both sides of the aisle. Leticia Wallace, who's our the bill sponsor, told her story, begged them just to call it for a vote in appropriations to give the House the opportunity to vote. Again, we have a supermajority. We had House members in the committee turn around to the chair and say, it's our fault that they have a contract, they're not receiving money, and that we don't have any message for them. We have a responsibility to make sure that agencies like theirs have the opportunity to save lives. And the chair committee basically sat literally looking down at us saying, well, that's just not how we're going to do it. It was heartbreaking. The lack of compassion, the lack of human decency, the lack of commitment, these are elected officials that we're reaching out to. And here we have a committee of people who've been reached out to throughout the state of Illinois who are turning around and saying, we have a responsibility to take action. And then at the leadership level, it just falls flat. 24,000 nights of shelter. If we go away, it's not just the lives that we're working on saving every day. It's now an additional burden to the police departments in all of the local jurisdictions, right? We have Urbana, Champaign, the rural, some of the smaller police communities, as well as the sheriff and the university police. You're also talking about an added burden to the emergency rooms and the added cost to the community for folks who are underinsured. You also have the additional cost for mental health and substance abuse and childcare and kids on the street because they don't have a safe place at home. In Champaign right now, we have 633 kids without an address. We closed down, that has immediately increased. These are real lives, really impacted, and it's really easy to see that, to feel like you're not impacted, but even if you're not, for example, the victim of domestic violence, you're still footing the bill for the state of Illinois to ensure that the people who we serve have services. Right? In Illinois, we're paying double because of what's going on in Springfield. And I'm torn. I'm an optimist. We are doing everything that we can. I actually paid out of pocket part of our state unemployment taxes so that we could be legally compliant to continue to operate as a business because the state of Illinois was not honoring its side of the contract. I'm that committed to making sure that we stay in business. But what will it take for us to ensure the people that we've elected and the people that they turn to for leadership have as much value for the lives of the state of Illinois as we do?
So I'm happy to speak a little. Yes, thank you. I want to thank you for sharing that story, and I want to take this opportunity to say a couple of things, right? So hearing these stories here, it's very compelling, right? It moves all of us. We have to make sure that these stories are retold and mm-hmm. amplified, and so to that end, besides having a session like this taped, and it will be rebroadcast in various ways, we at AARP are creating and are about to launch a website dedicated strictly to this budget issue, and we'll use, by the way, another plug, we do have petitions in the back that we invite everyone to sign. We are going to keep finding ways to retell, amplify mm-hmm. your story and those of others. So that's a whole lot of it. I also, since I've got the mic, want to take the chance to make sure I make clear one other thing. You know, you're absolutely right. You know, we're reaching out, and often we're not heard, or they don't show up. And, you know, we invited representatives, legislators to come here and hear along with us, and guess what? I am glad. Thank you. There's a... Great. That is great. So kudos to you. I have to take that back. But the other thing I was just going to say briefly here is that, you know, so we've got to keep finding ways to not let our elected officials duck hearing our voices. And this is about not only, because some of the ducking we've heard is, oh, it's the leaders, one side or the other, the elected officials. This is part of this campaign, and a lot of our work is about getting to the rank and file and holding them accountable for getting a budget passed and moving the state toward fiscal health. And so a lot of this is going and making them feel they can't duck behind, whether it's the but anyway.
Thank you very much. Sir, yes, go ahead.
Yes, this is a 15-second question. I think I know the answer to it. My name is Kevin Light. I'm the head of the sociology department. I've only been here 2 years, and I love Illinois, and it's a great place. This question is for Professor Moody, and the question is basically, when you don't pass a state budget and your bond rating falls to junk status, somebody buys those bonds and gets the interest from them. Who buys them?
Well, if it's junk bonds, it won't be TIA, CREF, and it won't be pension funds and whatnot, because they're not allowed to buy junk bonds, and it'll be speculators. And in fact, if anybody has money to buy Illinois bonds, the farther down it goes, the better it is, because they have to pay those bills. And that's the irony of this, the whole public debt thing. I'm a political scientist, so I'm probably speaking beyond my knowledge on this, but. The state must pay their bonds. Bondholders are first in line all the time. And the reason interest rate goes up as credit rating goes down is because the investors or the credit rating agencies suggest that there is a reduced chance of the money getting paid back, when in fact it's 100% guaranteed to get paid back. Just like those of you who are on pensions, from the state, you guarantee you're going to get your money. There's no doubt about that, because right behind the bondholders come the pension. So if you have money, invest in Illinois bonds, because you're going to be making out like a bandit and you're not going to lose out.
So if the stock market is volatile and you're a wealthy elite person, you just don't pass a state budget, and then
there you go.
Bonds go up and they have to be paid.
But bonds are so boring.
Yeah. Not if they're junk.
That's true.
Thank you. Yes, sir, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Stuart Levy. I live in Champaign and work for the University of Illinois. And I guess my question is this: how can we convince our state legislators that they need to raise our taxes? Back in Blagojevich's time, when he was, you know, borrowing extravagantly against the future, and that was clear, I talked to our then state rep and said, "You need to raise my taxes." And she said, "Well, you know, our constituents wouldn't like that." Well, now the time is much more desperate than it had been. One of the big problems with Illinois' tax system is that it's constitutionally set to be flat, which means that it's unfair on its face. there are ways to make it more fair by, you know, without changing the constitution, by doing things like, you know, raising the minimum level for taxes to be levied at. But the main thing is we can't resolve this without a lot more revenue than we've been taking. We've been borrowing against the future. We've been borrowing against the pension system. How can we do this? A comment on borrowing against the pension system. I used to live in Minnesota, and I worked for the state there. And there we paid into Social Security, so I have a Social Security thing. Here in Illinois, all what would have gone into Social Security for state employees goes instead into the state pension system. And so people who talk about evading the Constitution by reducing the level of pensions for state workers are really taking back what would otherwise have gone into the federal system. But anyway, you have my main question. Thank you.
Who wants to take that? How do you convince politicians to raise taxes?
Well, in fact, one thing that Speaker Madigan and Governor Ryan both kind of agreed on, you probably need a tax increase. It's just how much, when, and what are the other things are going to have to be part of that. So I think anybody who's looked at the Illinois budget knows we need a tax increase. But equally, everybody knows we're going to have to make some big cuts, too. And nobody in this room is going to like them. And you're one of the few people I've probably run into in Illinois that would be in favor of a tax increase. Just trust me. Nobody ever likes tax increases. But at some point, I agree. I'm just suggesting if you poll, that isn't going to poll that well. But that doesn't mean you don't do it. I mean, I remember when I ran for governor, we polled because I was for making a temporary tax permanent, and it was like 6-1 against. Fortunately, I won because they trusted me, but that's another thing. But again, it's a difficult thing to do, raise taxes and cut spending. But I will say that I think everybody in Springfield, at least at the top level, where kind of this problem is, kind of know that has to be part of the final solution. Just getting them to that final solution is the challenge. And your point, and I think it's, these are very brave legislators who showed up tonight. I commend you. When I saw you walk in, I did a double take. But they're the key. Because sometimes when you get people so stubborn at the top, you got to get some other people who are a little more reasonable to get them to move. And so I think if we see movement, it's going to be when there is pressure from the rank and file that finally gets through to the leaders. There's only about three we're talking about it. Five leaders. And that'll be the key.
So we need to be telling our state legislature.
I think
that,
you need to keep talking to it. Be civil. But just, I mean, you had your 3 C's, I got my 3 C's, civility, compassion, and compromise. But, you know, be civil to them. But, you know, I think in the end, they're the key. I used to work for the leaders before being a governor. I was the staff to the Senate, the Senate president, the Speaker of the House. They worry about the rank and file. Now, things are a little different. Money has changed things a lot. But still, in the end of the day, the governor and the four leaders are still elected. And rank and file has an impact, at least for the four leaders.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
All right, so I'm one of those aforementioned legislators. I'm also one of the inaugural Edgar Fellows. My name is Representative Tom Morrison. I'm from the northwest part of Cook County, and I'm in my fourth term now. And I apologize that we were late. There was a bad traffic accident and then also dust storm. So if this topic came up, I apologize. But I've heard presentations from Mr. Mooney and, of course, Governor Edgar. But isn't a lot of what we're dealing with right now, we're dealing with sins of the past in terms of delayed, hard decisions. We all know that it's in the politicians love to do ribbon cuttings. They love to make people happy. They don't like raising taxes. But what we have needed for a long time was a major course correction. And the longer we have delayed on that, the harder those consequences eventually are. And it just seems like my perspective is much of the impasse does deal with budgetary issues. You know, I'm a Republican. The Democrat side is saying, oh, these are non-budgetary issues. Workers' compensation reform is a budgetary issue because government at the state level and at all our local levels, government is a major employer. Personnel costs are something like 75 or 80%. Unfunded mandates on our universities and on our local governments, those directly impact the budgets of all of us as taxpayers because we have to pay for those mandates via property taxes and sales taxes and things like that. And so the last thing I would want to say is it is a state budget. We are all, the state is we the people. And yes, we do need to work together, but very hard decisions, even harder decisions have to be made now because elected officials in the past were unwilling to make those or decided to just not take those on. And now we're suffering for it, and now hopefully those in office now can come to a resolution. So anyway, just some comments from you on those points.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. I think we'll hear from another state representative.
Hi, I'm Jeannie Ives. I'm the state representative. I'm from the Wheaton area, and my oldest son graduated from the University of Illinois in electrical engineering. And so because of that, I actually get to be an honorary member of the alumni caucus, which is fun, to meet with the university president. And I want to tell you, he's been down there to Springfield all the time. They're very active down there, pleading for what Champaign needs and certainly higher education. So we appreciate that conversation. We have our differences, but we do appreciate you always being in the conversation and being respectful about that. My question really, I guess, is for Mr. Mooney, and that's because when we talked about junk bond status, I would like your input and your what you think is going on, because we have a number of bills sitting in the House and the Senate that deal with intercepting state funds in the case of a default. And I want to understand how to interpret that, because in my opinion, the bondholders know more about what's going on than we know what's going on. And I think these bills are very dangerous, because when you do that, even though you may lower the bond rating and save taxpayer monies at their level by securitizing that lien of money coming from the state, and we're talking about they're intercepting LGDF, they can intercept motor fuel tax, they can intercept sales tax, they can intercept other money, they can intercept RTA Metro funds coming in. So when you intercept that money and you securitize it, so that the first person paid off is the bondholders and the money is diverted to them instead of going to services, I find that a dangerous proposition when that money is meant to go to services instead of bondholders. Now, this isn't one bill. There's five different bills that are doing this, both in the Senate and the House. To me, this is telling me a message that the bondholders are trying to know what's coming in our future. And I just want your input, since you're much more of an expert in looking at the market in this, since this legislation is something we have not seen in the past, and I'm a little bit concerned.
Well, I think you give me more credit than I deserve, because I'm not familiar with this particular little trick. But I will agree with you when you suggest that the bondholders know more what's going on, because there's millions of dollars at stake that they are personally responsible for. So they take excruciating care to understand what's going on. Whenever there's a piece of legislation that you don't know what it is or you don't understand, you have to be careful, because there will be people and institutions that are trying to make a buck on a state, you know, whether it's renting out a warehouse or whether it's getting their idiot brother-in-law a job on the road crew, whatever it is. So you have to be careful. But I can give you, afterwards, I'll give you a name of a guy who's a public finance debt guy that we work with at IGPA. He's actually moved to Texas just a few months. Speaking of people that leave for Texas, he just left this last semester, but he was with the IGPA for a long time, and he probably could help you because he knows a lot more about this than I do.
Okay, certainly I definitely appreciate that, and I just think that other people should be aware of it, that there's something afoot in Illinois, and we better right the ship, and it's going to be difficult. And I'll be the contrarian here. I don't know that a tax increase without any reforms is where we need to go. I think that sends businesses fleeing the state of Illinois, and it's all about jobs at this point. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative Ives. Yes, go ahead, please.
My name is Karen Medina. I have 2.5 degrees from the University of Illinois, 2.5. I have 3 points. One, I think this is majorly an issue. Okay, I can't speak, though. I think this is a major issue of privatization versus keeping it as state employees. Or so that's one issue, and that's why all the legislators that have been up here speaking have all been speaking about moving more away from having employees paid by us. When that happens, when you move it away and you privatize it, you have no oversight over it. That's one issue. Okay, so when people talk about talking to their legislators, why aren't they also talking to their other elected official, the governor of the state of Illinois, Governor Rauner? When you write a letter to your legislator, write one to Rauner too. Tell him exactly what's happening and why you're concerned about the budget. He and the other legislators that have talked about the issues that are here today are talking about privatizing, and they want, that's why they are holding back on the budget. Those were the main two things. I just want to support the Courage Connections for coming out. Those stories really need to be told, and thank you for inviting her to come. And we need to, if we don't pay for these things now, we will end up paying for them a lot more down the road.
Thank you very much for your comment. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Kathy Rhodes, and I'm a business owner in this community. I'm not going anywhere because my husband is a professor at the university, so I'm going to be here. But because AARP is one of our sponsors, I do work with seniors, and that is a big concern for me. Social service agencies are being drastically cut. You may never be raped. You may never be strangled. You may never be mentally ill. You may never be an alcoholic, but you will be old. Unless you're lucky.
If you're lucky. If we're lucky.
Unless you aren't. So my concern is, I have families and I have my customers who are seniors writing letters all the time. You talk about, keep writing, keep writing. They feel like I have been writing. And then we get the generic President Rauner, thank you for your time letter that everybody gets the same thing and they're a little bit disappointed. My concerns also are I'm getting every now and then a interest check, which is bizarre. Why don't you just pay me what you owe me and then you wouldn't have to pay interest? That would be nice. The Department on Aging is trying to introduce a new funding source, CRP, which I think is not a good time to do any kind of new funding programs if there's no budget. Those programs aim to take money away from seniors. It's very important that we have senior home care type of services, adult day and homemakers, and ways to keep people in their own homes. I don't think anyone here wants to be in a nursing home and is an option, but let's try to keep people at home. But those are the services that are going to be cut, and those people are going to go to the nursing home and cost the state more money, or their family are going to have to quit work and therefore not be a paid tax member and stay at home and take care of them. Another problem I have is I am required to have an audit every year from the state, and I asked this year, I said, could I just send statements about from my bank and show that I'm not dishonest, but no, I paid a $5,000 bill to a CPA? Guy who looked at my books and said, looks good. So here I'm paying, money to, because it's in my contract, but also the state has contracted with me that they will pay for the clients that I serve, and they are not doing so. So my question, I guess, is what else can we do besides having people send letters all the time? We're doing all those things. I feel like we're doing what we need to, and nothing's getting done.
Rosanna, would you like to maybe take
I'll,
that?
Yeah, I'll start. Well, you know, for some reason the term war of attrition comes to mind, and that's probably not a good term, but we've got to keep at it, but the keep at it means more than just, it's all of letters. It's all of the telling the stories. It's all of having, for us, a partner like NPR to keep amplifying these stories. It really is a keep at it, because if you break it down, it's a big, messy problem, but we're not going to be worn down. And if we have to keep at it, this is just short-term trying to get to a budget. It's really, we have to keep the pressure up, and we have to find and keep applying pressure at as many pressure points as we can. That's some of the short-term strategy. You know, this is about the budget, so we don't, well, I'm not going to spend a lot of time now talking about, you know, what we may need to talk about, you know, going forward structurally in our political system here in Illinois to make it to be able to elect and hold more accountable our elected officials. I mean, there are sort of levels and layers of things to do, but the short-term answer really is we have to keep up the pressure and keep up the pressure on each and every elected official, the governor, as well as every leadership and rank and file members of both parties. But also do so. We all have our C's. You know, these are going to be hard conversations. So it can't just be about digging in. You know, where we're coming from at ARP right now is we want to see everybody at the table and discussing what it's going to take to get a balanced budget. We're not digging in on any particular issues. You know, we're all probably going to have to feel some pain, but let's at least get to the point where everybody's at the table. But in any event. For us, you know, the answer is we have to keep finding those pressure points, keep applying that pressure, make it clear we're not going to go away, grow the voices, have those voices heard in different ways. There's letters. It's harder to perfunctorily respond to voices when they're in the room with you, and I really do applaud those legislators who are here and all of you who made sure you came to have your voices heard. We have to just keep finding all of those different pressure points and apply them, and that takes some getting out of our houses, you know, so maybe getting out of our comfort zone some. It's worth it. It's worth it. We have to keep doing it.
Right. Thank you very much. I believe Representative McDermott, is that right?
That's absolutely correct. I'm State Representative Margo McDermott from the Will County area, and I am just starting my second term, so been down in Springfield for 3 years. And I guess I'd sort of like to share with folks today what my life is like. When I was elected, I came from Will County Board, and I came from 30 years in corporate America. I was a problem solver, right? In Will County, we solve a lot of problems. We're building a new courthouse without raising any taxes. We know how to work across the aisle. We know how to do that by saving our money, you know, not increasing taxes and so on. So I thought that I would have to make some hard decisions. Are we going to have more funding for seniors, more funding for domestic violence shelters, maybe less funding for something else? I thought those would be the hard parts of my life. In fact, the hard part of my life is not being able to really grapple with any of the issues at all. You know that we have to deal with the bills that are before us. Parliamentary procedure says that we can only vote on and deal with the bills that come before us. And in the 3 years that I've been there, we have not worked on a pension bill. We have not worked on a budget. We haven't even done our constitutionally required job of figuring out what is our revenue for the year. That's job one. We haven't even done that in 3 years. I thought I would sit in an appropriations committee and try to make some of those Solomon-like decisions. And I was prepared to do that. But in fact, I feel really very much on the sidelines waiting for something to happen, waiting to be allowed to vote on some of these big issues. I don't like to say that you have to look to the five, the leaders, but that's the real, that's the reality of the life that I've been living down there. And when I talk to my constituents, I'm hearing exactly the same things from the folks in Will County that we're hearing here tonight. And the disability service providers, the senior providers, everyone that's dealing with citizens that deserve our attention here in the state have told the same stories to me that we're hearing here tonight. And I would love to be able to provide stability for them. Let's make a decision, let's make a budget, let's provide some funding that you can tell the people you're delivering the service to and your staff, this is what we're going to be doing for this year, this is what we can count on. And none of those things are happening. And as a member of the minority party, I don't have any ability to change that. All I can do is speak the truth about the extreme level of dysfunction, and I do that all the time, every chance I get. The only power I have is to speak the truth and to vote for the bills that come in front of me in a way that I think is going to be the best for the future of our state. I have a daughter, a 34-year-old daughter, and a little granddaughter, and my daughter's question is, what's the end game? What's the end game of what's happening in Springfield? How can we raise taxes, make no reforms to the cost drivers that have taken us to where we are, and expect a different outcome other than what we have, which is out of balance spending versus revenue, and people continuing to leave because they're not willing to fund continuing dysfunction? What's the end game? I ask myself that every day. I wish I knew the answer. I think we'd be happy to answer questions, but I just want to give people a little insight. It's not like we don't understand what the issue is. It's we're not allowed to grapple with the issue. Please, please, force them to let us grapple with the issue. Thank you.
Anybody on the panel want to respond to that?
Thank you for all being here, state representatives. I think Abraham Lincoln said something in the lead up to the Civil War that I think is relevant here, and it was all about keep your temper, because then both sides of the line can find a path forward. And I do think the answers here are not going to be one side winning or the other side winning or a polarized kind of worldview. I think the elements of a grand bargain, however it's called, will include revenue, will include tax, will include reform, will include fundamental growth in the economy, preservation of human capital, building out of jobs in regions as well as in cities, and the role of the universities and the human services are central to that. So one of the tragedies here is that the victims of this impasse are the folks who didn't actually create the long-term problem. And it will take multiple years. It won't be a single budget with complete balance in year one, and then we're fine forever. It'll be a 10-year dig or a 15-year dig, something like that, which will include a pension effort too. We have the assets, the intellectual assets, some of them in these rooms, you hear the professors, right, that can really help provide the solutions that will allow us to keep our temper, as Abraham Lincoln suggested, and find a balanced approach that can be sort of middle of the road, but equitable, and can get us moving forward. Because we need to start moving forward now, not backwards.
Thank you. Representative Phillips.
Yes, thank you. I'm the state representative from Jim Edgar's old district in Charleston, Illinois. And I've been state representative. This is my second term also. You know, to me, the key is this, is when state representative or legislators, all of us, decide that it's more important to do the job for our districts, for the state of Illinois, than getting reelected, and we take the politics out of it. That's a hard equation to get to, though. Jim, you've been doing this for a long time, and you know it's very difficult to take the politics out of it. We do polls to see how popular this is and that is. One of those that you spoke to was, you know, raising taxes. And you know the latest poll on that is 80% of the state, of our 12 million people, do not want to see the taxes raised. So this is the polarized issue when you got the Democrats and Republicans. Who's going to take those votes for raising those taxes? Because that potentially puts them at risk for being reelected. I, for one, have stated from the beginning, and you've heard me say it, I will take that vote because it's not that important to me that I come back to Springfield as doing what's best for the entire state of Illinois. And that is to get a functional budget, not just for one side, this side, left side. We hear only from specific people in Springfield. But the, you know, the working class people and all of them don't have the time. They don't come up to Springfield. They still have a strong voice in Illinois. And we have to somehow figure out a way to balance that. I am a business owner, and one of the reasons I got involved in this was, you know, our 2011, when we made the changes for the workers' compensation and was going to save the state, our employers, X amount of dollars, and come to find out it actually raised my workers' compensation. That was under their plan. You know, they don't have that skin in the game. If they had the skin in the game, every decision that they make would be very, very important to them. If they had to go home to their employees, which I have to, and explain why this, or explain why I can't raise your wages because this didn't happen the way we did it or thought it would be in Springfield. And so, you know, President, that I've been a proponent for not cut when Governor Rauner came out for that 31% reduction in higher education. I spoke against that in our caucus. I spoke against it I'm on both higher education committees. I spoke against it. I said, higher education can't take a 31% cut. You know, and I think that was, you know, a mistake. I think the governor has, you know, figured that out. Now this particular 2018, he's looking at a 15% cut with a 5% potential kickback for universities. I believe that is at the most our universities can take. I believe we need to find a way we could fund back in 2017 even. Because, you know, I represent Eastern Illinois University, and we need all the funding we can get for our universities. I believe besides education, business, they go hand in hand to work the state of Illinois as a whole. And so I'm willing to work on any grounds. You've been in my office. We've talked about it. I'm a huge proponent of the University of Illinois. My son just graduated from pharmacy school at the University of Illinois in Chicago, and I'm very proud of him. I'm very proud of the school. I'm very proud of our universities. And I am not a person that's willing to take a vote against our current pensioners. Changing the pension going forward, I'm willing to take that vote. So I'm very boisterous about what I will and will not do, and what I agree with the governor and not agree. I think our Republican Party has attempted to. I took a huge vote on a $4 billion out of whack when they brought that in the last legislative session. The only Republican that voted for it. I said, I will not vote to override the veto, though, unless you're willing to put your votes on a tax increase. They did not do that. And see, and that's what the issue is here. You know, politics. Who's going to win in 2018? Make no mistake, it has nothing to do with our universities and anything else in the state. It has to do with politics. Until you get past that mentality and understand there are some of us Republicans that are willing to work towards a balanced budget, a fair budget, when 30% of our current budget goes towards pension payments and 30% towards Medicaid payments, there's not enough money left over currently. And Jim, you know this, Governor, you know some of these issues that we're facing. And you do know that we have to have structural reform. You cannot do what Illinois has been doing for the past 20 years and expect, or 15, and expect an outcome that's different than where we're headed right now. Last in every position, businesses moving out. You know, you can debate it all day long, but we know those are true. And I don't want that to happen. I want our universities to grow, and I want our businesses to stay. So I'm willing to work for a balanced state budget, but there has to have that somewhere, a combination of the two, wouldn't you say?
Well, you want my answer? Well, I'll give you my answer. We need a budget. I appreciate the concern about workers' comp. But let me tell you, not having a budget the last 2 years has done more damage to your hometown, my hometown, than anything workers' comp is going to do to that place. So, yeah, I just say that I think you ought to deal with the budget. And I fought with Madigan over his workers' comp, and there's a time we went out and got on the Republican legislature, and we changed it. Now, unfortunately, they didn't stay a Republican legislature, but I'm just suggesting the most important thing is the budget. And I appreciate you and my former Edgar fellow, your philosophy on you went to workers' comp. I just think it's a mistake to hold up the budget until you get those. That's my concern. Because I think the economic damage that's been done, and I agree we had problems in the past, and there is no doubt the budget was out of whack when Governor Rauner came in, but it's a lot more out of whack now because we haven't had a budget for 2 years. So my suggestion is you know, you're not going to solve everything here one time. The most important is to solve the budget. And I appreciate the fact you have been supportive of your community. You have been about the only Republican who's broken ranks in the House. And in the end, to get this done, it's going to take Republicans and Democrats voting. And right now, neither party wants to go first in saying we got to do this. Democrats don't want to say we're going to make these cuts, and you Republicans don't want to say we're going to have to raise taxes, but you're going to have to do both. And how many days do we have left now?
I 100% agree with
that. How many
that
days
too.
We have? 15? 13 days. Yep. Now, after that, you can still do it. It's just going to take more of you. There's nothing that says after the end of May you can't resolve the budget, but it'll take 3/5. My thought is if you never get the four leaders and the governor to agree to something, you can get to 3/5. But both sides are going to have to be there. I agree with you on that. And unfortunately, neither side wants to kind of, I mean, the governor hasn't proposed a balanced budget, and the Democrats haven't proposed a balanced budget. You need a balanced budget. And we need that to start with. So that's my
right,
thing. But I appreciate you.
Thank you.
This is your area. I appreciate your other folks coming, but you're way up north. He came, and I appreciate that. Took courage to come tonight.
Thank you,
Representative. Because a lot of legislators that people have said, you can't find them. And that's good of him to come up, because I'm sure you're going to get an earful afterwards. That's part of the job, as you know now. That's government.
All right, we have time for just one more question. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, my name's Dale Morrissey. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Developmental Services Center in Champaign here. We provide services to people, children and adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities, about 1,100 people a year. But tonight I'd really like to speak as my role. I'm the chair of the Illinois Association of Rehabilitation Facilities, which represents about 85 organizations like DSC and thousands of people. This budget crisis, because it's carried on so long, has really got a lot of organizations at their breaking point. The rates for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, we're the 47th to 50th worst in the state of Illinois. So when you've got rates that low, and then you've got other payment issues, we can't get staff. There's organizations around the state that have 40% vacancy rate, many of them. There's organizations in your Will County that are closing, or they're closing group homes. There's homes that have people that are supposed to have four living in them. They're taking and closing them down to move eight because they can't keep them staffed. We have people that are working overtime until their breaking point. So people are leaving the field because the rates only afford most organizations to pay about $9.35 an hour. It's not a living wage, and people can't stay in the field. So we really need to put the human aspect on it, that there's people that are really hurting. I have a four-person group home in Mahomet. It's been ready to go for 21 months. Four people are waiting to get services, but I can't staff it. I can't get the staff to do it. I can't afford nurses to do it. And in that time, one of those person's mothers died of cancer. So something's got to happen to change this, because we've got to help the people that are most vulnerable. If we're going to have that strong state that I've lived in all my life, we've got to have that social fabric also. So when we're talking about making cuts, we've got to make sure that we make those cuts judiciously so we are supporting our most vulnerable citizens here, because the businesses aren't going to stay here if we don't have the services also to support those workers in Illinois. Thank you.
All right, before we say goodnight here, just any final thoughts from our panelists? Chris Mooney, we'll start with you.
One thing I will say, and it's been mentioned a couple of times already, and this is important for everybody to keep in mind, that this is going to be a long-term fix. Dave Merriman and Richard Dye, two economists at the IGPA, did a report last November where they've got an excellent model of the Illinois economy and the Illinois budget, and they projected that out to 2030, I think it was, and they looked at various fixes. How could we solve this? Because it's a ridiculous structural deficit with expenditures going way beyond revenue. So they tried 10 different fixes: raise the income tax to 5%, expand the sales tax base, grow the economy 3%, cut spending 2% per year. Went through each one of those and others, and the upshot was that none of those individually barely moved the needle in terms of closing that gap. The only way to close that gap, according to their model, is that we do all of those things and we do them consistently for 10 years, including, you know, higher taxes, cutting spending, and growing the economy at 3%, which is, you know, can you do that for 10 years period? But I think even more surprisingly, less likely is the fact that we would have really tough fiscal discipline in this state for 10 solid years. Hold on your hats.
Governor Edgar.
Well, when we mentioned it's like 13 days. Is that what you said, 13 days?
I think it's
until the end of the month, which is kind of the magic point. I don't know if something will get done. The one thing that at least this year that I've had a little hope is what's happened in the Senate, where you actually had Republicans and Democrats, and I give Senator Cullerton and Senator Rodonia a lot of credit. It's basically Senator Rodonia, because she took a lot of flack from her governor and from some of her members. And they have tried to work. See, they may not be successful, but that's been, I think, the most encouraging thing that I've seen in Springfield in the last 2 years. Hopefully we can see that some point in the House, where the members might get together and say, all right, Speaker and Representative Durkin, who's very close with the governor, you know, we're gonna come up with something. We got to get something moving. But at least I think that indicates members on both sides of the aisle, at least in the Senate, have been willing to, some of them, to sit down and try to see if they can resolve this. Now, unfortunately, it hasn't got that far, but at least that I thought was a hope. And, I've been around Springfield a long time. 13 days is a long time in Springfield. I can remember 3 days before the end of the session. Now, we're a little more cordial back then, and we at least met. I do hope that we'll see maybe the four leaders and the governor. And it's not the four leaders and the governors. It's usually individual stuff that has to happen. But again, I know people are pessimistic here. I will say at least what we saw in the Senate was at least a hope that they can do something. Also, I'll just say, even if they don't get it done by the end of the month, if the governor and the four leaders would ever agree to something, they could get the 3/5 votes with the control they have on what happens in the rank and file. So don't let pressure up if the end of May comes and we don't have a budget, because the problem's still there, and I think there's still a possibility you could get something done. And again, don't ever underestimate your effect. You may be talking to legislators, and I have people come to me, and letters are good, personal, in your face, in a polite way. Does have an impact. Contrary, I mean, I never would tell people yes when they talk to me. I mean, I was known as Governor No, but it made an impact, because later I could say yes. So don't stop talking with your legislators. It's hard to get to the governor. I have to tell you, I never read all those letters. And this governor doesn't read all, you can't. But if you ever happen to see him out, people, parades. I don't know if he comes to parades around here, if you have parades around here that he might come to, but I used to listen a lot in parades. But legislators do respond, contrary to what you might think. And I think the fact that these four and showed up, knowing this probably weren't gonna be the most popular four people in the room, I think indicates that, they're willing to, and you may disagree. I mean, I disagree with a couple of them, but I respect they have a point of view and they feel very strongly on it. And that's part of a democracy, this give and take. Now, we've had a lot of give and take. Hopefully we'll get a budget.
President Queen.
So, at the beginning I said we needed to move from urging to demanding, and I mentioned that in Springfield I see a lot of good faith, and I think you saw that tonight, courage and willingness to actually work through problems. We've got to get a budget. It's not moral to devastate the human services in the state. That's clearly not what we should be doing as citizens. It's we need to recognize that universities are engines of prosperity. They're not engines of corruption and bloat and everything else. That's how you get to a place where you can grow an economy, and maybe more than 3%, because we've got tremendous assets in this state, and this university is certainly ready to do that. So we need stability. We need an outlook. We recognize that there are cuts coming. We know that there are tax needs, revenue needs. There needs to fix the pension plans, and there are other things that need to be worked on. With good faith, we can do this. We have to do it together. We have to facilitate the dialogue rather than increase the polarization, because there are egos and individuals involved who find it difficult to do that. But I'm an optimist. If we come through this, Illinois is the size of the Netherlands. We have incredible assets in this state, that low-hanging fruit that we can bring to bear on these problems. If we get this right and put us on a path, it'll take multiple years. We won't get to the Valhalla instantly. It'll take a long while, but we can develop that progress, and we can be role models to the next generation that are, as we speak, celebrating their graduation here at the University of Illinois, 20,000 of them. They are ready, they're well trained, they're educated, they're articulate, they care, they're connected, they want to do good things with the world. So let's take advantage of our assets, and let's respect all the individuals involved, even the ones who are hard to get to sometimes, because they care too, perhaps in a different way. Institutions like ours can be venues, places where convening can take place, the kind of convening that the state really desperately needs right now. And I think this is a good example of that convening.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, President Clean. Rosanna Marquez.
Yes, thank you. I'm going to echo some of the comments. We're in this for the long haul, right? I mean, these issues have taken years. These problems have taken years to reach the point that they're at, and it's going to take a multi-year strategy. But for the short term, we're here about the budget, and we've got to start with getting a budget passed. And so to that end, I want to thank all of you who have come here and let your voices be heard. I do want very much to thank the elected officials who came here, who were here to hear and maybe take some heat, and that's not bad, and listen, and also share their point of view. That's all good, but it is only the beginning. This is the second of 11 forums that we have, that we will be doing with NPR around the state. They will, because we are optimists, but still anticipating that a budget may not get done by the end of the month. We do have 9 more of these planned for the remainder of the year. That is only one of a number of ways that we can continue to keep the pressure on our elected officials. There is no other way around. They need to hear from us. They need to hear from us at these forums. They need to hear from us maybe in writing. It's really good to get in their faces if you can do that. These stories will be amplified. You already heard a little bit about that in a number of ways. We are still collecting partners. It's great to hear that the state universities have been raising their voices in Springfield. There are others who still need to get into the game beyond the individuals, but Illinois is such a great state that it really deserves our best efforts to make this budget happen for starters, and we'll take it from there. Thank you.
All right. With that, that will wrap up our Illinois Issues Forum on the state budget, hosted by Illinois Public Media and NPR Illinois, and sponsored by AARP. Thank you, everyone, for attending. How about a hand for our panelists tonight? Thank you.